You can see the whole playlist online at wrct.org.
We'll be right back. DePose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
So Joe Biden is taking a very different approach to foreign policy than the former president Donald Trump took. And we sort of have like one of our first big foreign policy conflicts to talk about. There's been a little bit of Joe Biden talking about and around China policy and tariffs and the like. But now it's Putin and now it's Russia, and things are very quickly getting interesting. And unfortunately, anytime I touch this issue, I have to give some disclaimers, which I'm going to give in a moment. But the question is, what's going on? Well, what's going on is that during a video call with Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday, Joe Biden issued a warning. And the warning said in very simple terms is, do not invade Ukraine or we are going to hit you with very strong economic sanctions. And this is one of the first really major foreign policy events of its kind with Joe Biden. Donald Trump made a really big show out of bragging about how he would deal with adversarial foreign leaders. With Putin, it was mostly kid gloves. With Kim Jong-un, it was falling for the obvious meaningless platitudes and promises that we've gotten from every North Korean leader recently and thinking he accomplished something. And, you know, we can look at the full list of those relationships. Well, for Joe Biden, it seems as though it's going to go a little bit differently. Now, the context here, if you've not been following it, is that U.S. intelligence has determined that Russia has massed what they believe to be 70,000 troops near the border with Ukraine and appears to be making preparations for an invasion maybe as soon as early in 2022. Now, appears to be making preparations is not just technically accurate, it actually may be the entire point, which is to gauge what the reaction is going to be of other major powers, but we're going to get to that. Ukrainian officials are saying Russia's sending tanks, they're sending snipers, they're trying to provoke return fire to then justify a full invasion. That's the position of Ukrainian authorities. Now I need to make my disclaimers. I know that for 90% of my audience, I don't have to say this. I have to say it for 10% of my audience. But if I don't, my inbox becomes a hellscape. I am telling you what Joe Biden is saying to Vladimir Putin. I am not suggesting war with Russia. I am not cheerleading war with Russia. I don't want war with Russia. Do not email me saying, David, why are you such a neocon imperialist that you want war with Russia? Trump wanted to get along. Why, David? I'm not saying that. Please don't email me that. Now, in the call, the belief is that Biden said, if you invade Ukraine, we're going to hurt your economy. Putin was expected to ask for a guarantee from Joe Biden that the NATO military alliance will never involve Ukraine. Ukraine wants membership in that shared defense alliance. Putin doesn't want that. Now, in advance of the call, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki put out a statement where she said, quote, we've consulted significantly with our allies and believe we have a path forward that would impose significant and severe harm on the Russian economy. You can call that a threat. You can call that a fact. You can call that preparation. You can call it whatever you want to call it. That was Jen Psaki on Monday. So listen, this is not going to go the way it went under Trump. This is going to be different. Biden is not going to fly to Finland, meet with Putin, do a press conference where he says, I don't know, I asked Putin if they hacked us and Putin denied it very strongly. Okay. I don't know. Putin said his troops aren't really massing at the border. They're just passing by on a sightseeing tour. Okay, that one I made up. The first one happened under Trump. That last one I made up. That's not going to be the way it is under Joe Biden. This doesn't mean we want war with Russia. This doesn't mean we want Biden starting to drone Russia, boots on the ground, or any of the stuff. It's also important to understand that Putin has done this before. And it's not a guarantee that Putin necessarily plans to invade or wants to invade. He is constantly gauging reactions. Putin is not stupid. Putin is actually a brilliant guy in his own way. And he's gauging reaction. He's sowing chaos. He's creating confusion. And massing the troops at the border may not be a plan to invade. I think the key part here is there are some people on the pro-Trump right who are saying, Putin would never invade. Obviously, that's not true. History tells us that's not true. What could be true is that Putin does not intend to invade this particular time and is trying to see what kind of reaction he can get. Last thought on this. One, it'll be interesting to see how Putin reacts to Biden's warning. In other words, if this is a trial balloon, what, if anything, will Joe Biden's warning do to dissuade Putin or not? That's number one. And then number two, I got a few emails from people in the audience thinking along the same lines, which is it possible that Russia and China are coordinating on Ukraine and Taiwan respectively to do actions at the same time, not working together, but the timing coordinated in order to really see if and what the US and NATO are going to do. It's a very interesting speculation. I don't think at this point we have evidence that that's actually what's going on. But like everything else, we're going to watch it and it will be very interesting to see what, I mean, quite frankly, this is the first kind of adversarial foreign policy test for Joe Biden, major one anyway, of his presidency. So we will watch it. Always curious to know your thoughts. So yesterday we talked about Dr. Anthony Fauci's recent statement that, again, we always want to be clear not to overplay our hand. Dr. Fauci on Monday said, which I told you about yesterday, anecdotal early data points in a general way towards Omicron, the new COVID variant, probably causing, on average, less severe disease. That's like a lot of hedging and caveats, but that's sort of where our knowledge is at this point in time. We have another slightly stronger statement from Dr. Fauci, which I'm going to get to in a moment. But first, I want to address something many of you have been emailing me about, saying, David, sir, why is it, if Omicron is less severe, that cases are spiking? Now, cases and severity are two different things. But the first question we have to answer to even do this is answer the question, are cases spiking? And if so, are they Omicron spikes or not? Let's start with the numbers. Are cases spiking? Yes, very, very much so. Insane numbers. In the United States, cases are now up to about 117,000 per day. They were down to 72,000 per day in their recent bottom. Now up to 117,000 per day. That's a huge increase, nearly a two-thirds increase, 63% higher cases per day in the US. The same thing is happening globally, where cases spiked from a low of about 400,000 a day, still a crazy number, up to 611,000 cases per day. That's an increase of 52% globally. So are cases spiking? Without a doubt, way, way, way up. It's not only cases that are spiking. Hospitalizations are also way up in the United States. We now are about 6,000 new hospitalizations for COVID per day. We had been down to about 2,500 at one point over the summer. But the key question is this a sign of Omicron spreading wildly and putting people in the hospital? And so far, the answer is no. It appears that while a higher percentage of new cases are Omicron, higher and higher over time, the current spike in cases is being driven by the Delta variant, and the rise in hospitalizations definitely being driven by the Delta variant per some analyses. Now, on Omicron, we also heard from Dr. Fauci again, and Dr. Fauci is now speaking with slightly more certainty, slightly more definitiveness, who says that it's going to take weeks to know for sure, but early indications suggest that the severity of Omicron cases is no worse than previous strains, and possibly milder, which would be very welcome. The not so good, it spreads like wildfire. Reinfections appear to be higher, but on severity, Dr. Fauci's saying it almost certainly is not more severe than Delta. Now, still, if it's as severe and more contagious, it's not a big victory. And it's going to take more time to determine the specifics. We're also getting more and more anecdotes about just how easily Omicron spreads. Last week, I spoke with Nicholas Christakis, and he talked about this anecdote, which he said it's an important anecdote, about two travelers quarantining in Hong Kong, one who opened the door for room service, and then another across the hall who later opened the door, caught the virus. Now, as Nicholas Christakis said, that might not have been how he caught it. There could be more to that, but as an anecdote, pretty horrifying stuff. Other anecdotes. 69 of 150 participants at a Danish Christmas party have now tested positive for Omicron. It's about half of the attendees. Nearly 70 intensive care medics at a Spanish hospital now have COVID after a Christmas party. Not yet totally clear if that's Omicron. So we want Omicron to be milder. It's clearly very contagious, and we're going to have to keep waiting to get definitive information. But the hope would be equally or slightly more contagious, but dramatically less severe, particularly if there's going to be immune evasion. That would be sort of the ideal outcome. And remember, over time, evolutionary pressure for these viruses is more transmissible, less severe, to the point where could it be in a year? Could it be 2 years? Could it be 5 years? I don't know. 5 years is more depressing, but it could be a very contagious cold, indistinguishable from the average head cold in terms of severity. That is the trajectory to sort of hope for at this point in time. And how long it'll take to become a reality is a question that we don't yet have an answer to. Let me know your thoughts. And maybe just as importantly, find me on Twitter at @dpacman and let me know, are you now doing something differently based on Omicron, relative to what you were doing before? Are you doing anything differently now? Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Let me know. And remember that next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, December 14th, we'll be doing our next David Pacman Show viewer town hall. We will be streaming it live on the Pacman Live YouTube channel, and you will be able to participate via the David Pacman Show Discord. Remember that members will get priority access during the town hall. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're continuing to try to close out 2021 as strongly as possible. I mentioned earlier this week, the last 6 months have been a little tougher for the show, quite frankly. And although the audience has kept growing, the economic situation has led to a lot of people canceling memberships, and things are looking a little bit less good. So I want to re-invite you to sign up at joinpacman.com. We've made an offer, which several dozen folks have availed themselves of, which is if you get a membership for the year at full price on our website, I'll send you a free t-shirt of your choice. You can choose. I mean, listen, of course you can pick the size. It would be crazy if I said, you've got to have a 2XL. That would be nuts. What kind of a host would I be? You can pick the design. You can pick the color. So free t-shirt sent to you anywhere in the world with a full price yearly membership at joinpacman.com. Just sign up and email info@davidpacman.com and we'll get that out to you ASAP. And you can also get memberships for just a couple bucks a month if you use the code BETTER21. The code BETTER21 will give you a big discount off of the membership of your choice. Would love for you to sign up. There's a very good article in The Atlantic called Trump's Next Coup Has Already Begun. And the article is by Barton Gellman. And Barton's main argument is that January 6th was essentially practice. It was a dry run of new techniques and tactics to subvert an election. And Gellman says that now Donald Trump's GOP, whether Trump himself is part of it or not, and that's a really important thing. Whether or not Trump is part of Trump's GOP, they are now much better positioned to subvert the next election. And Gelman points out, among a number of important things, that the next coup is likely to look a lot less like a coup. And this is what's so dangerous and pernicious about it. And it's really like, if you have one takeaway from this story, it's the coup is going to look a lot less like a coup. If you can make the coup attempt not look like one, it is way more likely to succeed, and it's way more likely to raise eyebrows and ruffle feathers. After the 2020 election, and even in the lead up where Trump was already talking about, I might not accept the results, etc., Trump's actions looked like a coup attempt. The January 6th insurrection blatantly looked like a coup attempt. Trump trying to strong arm Mike Pence, obvious coup attempt. But the next one might not so obviously look like a coup. They tried it in 2020 in a pretty damn brazen way. But after seeing what worked and what didn't work, now they're in a position to be able to set up the next attempt slightly more surreptitiously. They're setting up systems to have partisan control over which ballots are counted and which ballots are thrown out. They're creating partisan mechanisms to certify or reject election results on the basis of party lines. And as Gelman writes in The Atlantic, and read the article, we're linking to it, it's very good, they are driving out or stripping power from election officials who refuse to go along with the coup attempt from last November and December and January. I mean, the attempt really lasted quite a long time. And remember that even their legal arguments failed in 2020. They had those dozens of court challenges. They were all thrown out. But they are fine-tuning or calibrating, I guess we could say, the legal aspects as well to have a better shot if next time they use slightly less crazy legal arguments and they have slightly more right-leaning judges that get to decide, maybe they actually get something done. So that's the behind the scenes. Now, the plain view piece is an important part because it's not just what you do behind the scenes. It's what's the public attitude to what you're doing. They are continuing to hammer publicly on people with the results can't be trusted. Anybody might have won. The results aren't secure. The claims of fraud are generally true. The idea there is you fine-tune the mechanisms behind the scenes. You create a public that believes you can't trust the results. You're much more likely to set yourself up for some level of success, both by having the tactics in place and by having as much of the population as possible in a state of mind where they say, I don't really know who won. Let them do it. Let them do this because it's not even really clear who won because there's so much fraud. You create a public more willing to accept a reversal on the basis of supposed fraud. And meanwhile, you work the systems that will actually allow you to do it, hoping enough people look the other way. And this is why I continue to insist. The 2020 big lie and the insurrection, it's a horror, not just for what it was on the merits, but it's a horror for what it might open the door to in the future. Because I don't want to say it almost worked, but it came closer to having an impact than we would like to see. And I hate to say this because it's really scary. I don't know that Joe Biden and the current slate of Democrats are really set up to fight it. I'm not saying they're incapable, but they don't seem to either be paying enough attention or be willing enough to really do what it takes. There's not enough public awareness here about the fact that this is not, it's not like, oh, we tried a coup in 2020, we didn't get it, that's it, now we're going to try to win on policy, right? I mean, that's not what they're doing. There are not enough safeguards being put in place to counter what Republicans have done in the last year. And quite frankly, I mean, you could even go back and say what happened in 2000 in Bush v. Gore with the Supreme Court, Katherine Harris, Florida. That should have been, maybe it was, I mean, it should have been a signal that they are going to do it again and they're going to try harder and harder. And they are going to try to win, not by getting more votes, by earning votes. They're going to try to do it with voter suppression, gerrymandering, and now this new level, which is just saying we won and trying to sue their way into office. The left may partially be weaker, but also the left is not even playing the same game. The right have given up on governance and policy completely. They've given up on convincing voters what we offer is better and we can prove it. They certainly will say what we offer is better because they're offering communism, which is a lie, but they are about cultural issues. They're about owning the libs. They're about winning by gerrymandering and cheating. Everything they do is done with the next election in mind. How can we take the next election? This applies to voters as well. During Bush and Obama, Republicans would say, using the military is good. You're alpha if you want to send the military here and there. And Bush was good because he did it, and Obama's bad because he's not doing it. Under Trump, it then became, well, now war is bad. War is bad. Hillary will get us into wars. Vote Trump because war is now bad. Under Biden, getting out of Afghanistan goes back to being bad. Trump would have done it better. He would have done it later or earlier or differently better. This is the asymmetry problem that I've pointed out, that they are operating in a completely different way, and it's going to be even more noticeable going forward. Let's talk a little bit about something we've discussed quite a bit over the last 3 to 4 months. I've been talking to you about the growing rift within the Republican Party, this sort of civil war, as we're calling it, which has mostly been Trump Republicans versus slightly less bonkers Republicans, people like Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, Mitt Romney, and some others. And I've also said before, the Republican civil war is good for the left. The left should encourage it. Let's help along the Republican civil war. Let's weaponize the Republican civil war against them to any extent that we can. We now have a new participant in this civil war who seems to be trying to play both sides. We've not seen this before. And I'm talking about Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw. Dan Crenshaw, who has put out very confused takes about socialism and different things, he seems smart enough to realize that he needs to figure out a way to play both sides on this Republican civil war. He is actually hugely pro-Trump on policy, which is hilarious because it's like, what policy? But okay, during the Trump presidency, Crenshaw defended Trump's COVID policy. Totally abortive policy. Crenshaw defended it. Trump said he liked Trump's economic policy. Crenshaw said he liked Trump's economic policy. But he's not big on the theatrics. He's not big on the cartoonish nuttery of the right, or at least not as big. Well, Crenshaw spoke at the Texas Liberty Alliance, and he did something that's very interesting. He trashed the cartoonish pro-Trump people by saying they're grifters. They didn't actually vote with Trump as much as I did, I being Crenshaw. And it's sort of like treading water. So check out this clip and now understand that when Crenshaw talks about the Freedom Caucus, he's talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene, Mo Brooks, Paul Gosar, Louis Gohmert, Jim Jordan, those types of kooky for Cocoa Puffs Republicans. Take a look.
Supporting these two. There's actually other veterans in Morgan's race. There's other front runners. But why support these two? Well, because I've been in Congress for almost 3 years now. There's two types of members of Congress. There's performance artists, and there's legislators. Now, the performance artists are the ones that get all the attention. The ones you think are more conservative because they know how to say slogans real well. They know how to recite the lines that they know that our voters want to hear. Let me tell you guys something. In the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, when Republicans were in control, when every single time we were voting on Donald Trump's agenda, who do you think was at the top of that list voting with Trump, and who do you think was at the bottom? A lot of names you would recognize were at the bottom of that list. A lot of names you would recognize are at the top of that list. Number two is, it's probably going to make you cringe a little bit, it's Adam Kinzinger. Voted with Trump almost 99%. He was number two. You know who's at the bottom? Everybody in the Freedom Caucus. All of them. What you hear so often is not true. It's not true. We have grifters in our midst. Not here, not like in this room, that's not what I mean. I mean in the conservative movement. Lie after lie after lie, because they know something psychologically about the conservative heart. We're worried about what people are going to do to us, what they're going to infringe upon us.
So that is super interesting. First of all, Crenshaw straight up says, these people, Green and her ilk, these are performance artists and grifters. Okay, fair. So Crenshaw must be an anti-Trump Republican, right? Wrong. He is criticizing them as grifters because they perform and they do the theatrics, but at the end of the day, they are not actually pro-Trump enough in terms of how they vote. He says they should be more truly pro-Trump by actually supporting more of Trump's policies back while Donald Trump was president. And then he says, hey, you know who does? Adam Kinzinger. Kinzinger is good. So then you might say, if you've been following the way the battle lines have been drawn, you might say, wow, that's a big attack on the Trump people. Because among Republicans, there's been no bigger critic of Trump than Adam Kinzinger, right? Well, no, not really. Because Crenshaw is saying Kinzinger is good because he supports Trump more often than these Freedom Caucus people based on voting. So there's three takeaways here, and they're all important. Number one, Crenshaw is smart enough to recognize the rift. And he's sort of trying to play both sides for now because it's unclear what the future of the Republican Party is in 2022 and 2024. Is it a Trumpian Republican Party in the coming election year and in 2024, or is it not? So that's one thing that he's doing. Number two, the Civil War is real. And it should be encouraged because this is exactly the type of confusion that can create factions where Republicans damage themselves. And we should welcome that. I mean, to the extent that the left is stinking it up, let's encourage the right to screw themselves if we can. And third, and this is really the key, and I've told you this before, the so-called anti-Trump Republicans, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, etc., they still mostly supported everything Trump did. They simply think Joe Biden won in 2020. These are not our friends. These are still Republican nuts who accept the election results. Liz Cheney accepts Trump did something wrong with Ukraine, but still voted with Trump almost all the time. And what's happened is that the bar has been so lowered that it can be tricky to remember. These are still extremists, right? If Liz Cheney is basically Dick Cheney politically, we saw Dick Cheney accurately as a neocon kook when he was the vice president. Liz Cheney, more or less under the same Republican umbrella as Dick Cheney, now seems so much more reasonable because she said Trump lost. The bar is so low that they say one or two things that are true and we go, these are good people. These are not our friends. These are not our allies. And let's not get confused and believe that they are. We're going to have more on this, and you can send us your comments on our Instagram. Find us at David Pakman Show on Instagram. And if you want to see a really wacky hate mail I got yesterday, follow me on Instagram at David.Pakman. So this you absolutely have to see, and I want to make sure I set this up for you so you understand the full scope of this. Months ago, we started seeing this partisan gap on COVID. And the COVID rates were higher in Trump counties, hospitalizations were higher, deaths have gone now almost three times higher in the heavy Trump counties, really bad places to be for COVID, and maybe in some other ways, compared to the big Biden counties. Huge, huge gap. And I don't know if you guys remember, but I jokingly said, how soon are they going to start saying, isn't it suspicious that you've got all these unvaccinated Trump supporters getting COVID? Isn't it suspicious that this is taking place? And of course, the reason would be simple. Well, the vaccine protects you. The vaccine protects you to some degree from infection, and it protects you to a greater degree from serious illness, hospitalization, and death. It was a joke. I joked that we would hear that. But you can't joke about it anymore, because the joke has become a reality. Radical right-wing broadcaster Stu Peters has the flu or COVID. He's not saying. It seems he doesn't know. He's probably not even going to get tested. And he is actually saying, I have this because it was a targeted attack. They are targeting people with cold, flu, and COVID as a weapon to punish them for not getting vaccinated, apparently. Let's check out the clip. You'll notice at first it's like almost too much for his guest, Deanna Lorraine, but then she quickly falls in line with the insanity and even adds her own craziness. You've got to see this.
I wouldn't be surprised if this so-called cold, the virus, the flu that I have right now, was a targeted attack on me. Do you speculate that some of that might be going on as well?
A targeted attack?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like the bioweapon being released on you, this sociopath, yes. Tony Fauci, when he chimerically engineered this taxpayer-funded, lab-originated, intentionally released Wuhan, China virus. I mean, that could probably be used against people automatically. I mean, people, Republicans, conservatives, talk show host people being targeted with this virus, right? I mean, don't you think? So
well,
they can paint these 100%. this picture about, oh, well, Stu Peters got the coronavirus. He did it to himself because he's not vaccinated.
Right. Exactly. No, 100%. I mean, we talked about last week with the World Economic Forum launching this bubble gun that you just point a gun basically and someone gets a vaccine. I'm sure that they have the power to, you know, target somebody to get COVID. All of the very prominent Republicans and people who have been outspoken against vaccines, pastors, et cetera, suddenly they come down with a bad case of COVID and it makes the news, you know, anti-vaxxer, anti-masker pastor comes down with COVID. It's all too suspicious. And I absolutely think people are being targeted.
Well, they're going to have to try harder than this because this thing, whatever I have, is weak as hell.
You're stronger than it.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I got a little bit of a stuffy nose now and a little bit of a scratchy throat. Whoop-de-doo.
She's literally saying it. She's saying it's suspicious. These people, they speak out against vaccines. Before you know it, they have COVID. It must be that someone is infecting them on purpose. Folks, that's how it works. This is the absolute epitome of the unfalsifiable argument. If you don't get vaccinated and you get COVID, it's not because you were unvaccinated and totally unprotected. It's because they infected you as a punishment with a weaponized virus because you didn't get vaccinated. That is an argument that cannot be defeated with facts or reason because they didn't reason their way into it. Now, also, it's funny that, I mean, you know, like, quite frankly, who the hell is Stu Peters? Is Stu Peters so important that anyone would even bother to infect him deliberately? Like, who cares that Stu Peters is against vaccines? Why would you even go and try to infect him? And that's another aspect of conspiratorial thinking that is very self-centered. It assumes a level of self-importance that goes beyond any common sense or reason. You simply aren't that important a player in this whole thing. And sometimes what pushes people, at this point, how much have we talked about conspiracism and conspiratorial thinking? A ton. And there's so many aspects to this, gullibility and, you know, all these different things. Oftentimes, when you believe you are a player in the whole thing, the delusion is that you see yourself as so important as one of 7-8 billion people on this planet that clearly they would be targeting you or paying attention to what you're saying. It's really quite simple. He caught a virus against which he wasn't vaccinated. It might be COVID, and he seems to not have gotten the COVID vaccine. It might be flu. I'm guessing he also doesn't get the flu vaccine. That's it. He's at higher risk because he didn't get vaccinated and it got him. There is no big mystery here, but it always has to be more complicated, partially by putting himself at the center of this grand conspiracy. And they are so close to getting it. I mean, you know, Deanna Lorraine, she actually says, you know, all these unvaccinated people are getting sick. Well, apply Occam's razor. Maybe it's because the vaccine really does protect you. No, she has to stop short of that and instead go with the more complicated explanation. The unvaccinated people are being targeted by those who have weaponized the virus as a punishment for not falling in line with vaccination. And as I don't remember who it was now, is it Peter Boghossian? I don't remember who came up with this. You're not going to reason your way out of a belief you didn't reason your way into. And we're not going to reason people out of beliefs that they didn't reason their way into. And that's exactly what is happening with Stu Peters right here. The midterm election season for 2022 is likely to start earlier than ever this time around. I was talking to our YouTube rep recently, and he said, expect interest in these 2022 midterms to start and to see more serious campaigning and interest on YouTube as early as spring of next year, rather than more like early summer. And there are some really good reasons why we would expect that. Not only are there increasingly interesting particular races to look at, including the Texas gubernatorial election where Beto O'Rourke is running, Pennsylvania Senate, we now have this quack cure promoter, Dr. Mehmet Oz. We also have John Fetterman running on the Democratic side. Okay, that's interesting. So we've got interesting races starting to fill the docket, but the stakes are extremely high in terms of who controls the House and Senate starting in January of 2023. And we could go through a long list of reasons that this is important, including to what degree Republicans will be able to stonewall anything Joe Biden tries to do. They've been partially stonewalling everything so far. They might completely stonewall everything if they take control of the House. But maybe just as importantly is the reality that the current Republican Party is wackier than it has ever been. And among their goals is this simmering idea of making Donald Trump Speaker of the House if they take control of the House of Representatives in November. Now, you might be saying, whoa, stop the clock, David. Trump isn't running for House. How could it be the Speaker? You may or may not know, one does not have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House. I'll talk to Ro Khanna about this when we have him back on the show soon. The House can vote for anybody. If the House decides they want me to be Speaker of the House, I could be Speaker of the House. And starting months ago, there was this idea, which was mentioned on Steve Bannon's bizarre program, of installing Donald Trump as Speaker of the House, even without him being a member of the House of Representatives, impeaching Joe Biden, and then having Donald Trump preside over the vote to impeach Joe Biden in the House. Beleaguered radical Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz is really into this idea. Starting back in July, he started talking about, if we win in 22, we will make Donald Trump Speaker of the House. And at the time, it seemed that it might have just been a publicity ploy to fundraise, get attention, maybe raise money for his legal defense fund. But Matt Gaetz mentioned it again in August, and he mentioned it again yesterday. Senior White House correspondent for Yahoo News, Alexander Nazarian, published a tweet about this saying, quote, Matt Gaetz just told me at a press conference that if Republicans win the House in 22, he will move to install Trump as House Speaker. So there are really three questions here. Question one, is Matt Gaetz serious? He appears to be. Second question, would Republicans actually nominate Trump to be Speaker of the House if they took control? And the third question is, if nominated, would Republicans overall actually vote to make Donald Trump Speaker of the House? The answers to the first two questions are pretty simple. Matt Gaetz is serious, and I do think that Donald Trump would be nominated for Speaker of the House if Republicans take control in 2022. The third question is the key question. Just because Republicans take control and someone nominates Trump to be Speaker, do they really elect Trump to be Speaker of the House? Understand that it's an open question, not morally, but strategically. If Trumpists don't do particularly well in the November midterms, if Donald Trump's power within the party seems diminished, it's less likely that Republicans would be willing to do something so cartoonish. On the other hand, and particularly if Republicans take control of the House on the basis of many Trumpists winning new seats in the House, it is completely plausible that Republicans would be willing to make Trump Speaker of the House, and it would be one of the most cartoonish and pathetic circumstances in American politics in a very, very long time. Unfortunately, the combination of historical trends where the first midterm after a new president is usually bad for that party, meaning it would be bad for Democrats in November, combined with gerrymandering, combined with population shifts that might see Democrats losing a few seats just on that basis, it is looking more and more like Republicans are going to win the House in November. It's not a guarantee. And when I say that, I'm not saying it so that we do nothing. I'm saying it so that we don't throw in the towel and we actually fight for the house, because if we lose that house, it's going to be very, very bad for a long period of time. So we spoke earlier in the show about Joe Biden warning Russian President Vladimir Putin, don't invade Ukraine. If you do it, we're going to put in place economic sanctions. You're not going to like it. Don't do it. Well, Tucker Carlson doesn't like it. He doesn't like what Joe Biden is saying. Last night, Fox News propagandist Tucker Carlson sided with Russia and with Vladimir Putin, saying the president of Russia just wants to keep his Western borders secure. Now, I already told you earlier that Russia has been massing troops at the border with Ukraine, the idea being they're either gauging what the reaction would be to a potential invasion, or they're actually planning an invasion of Ukraine. And Joe Biden went to Putin yesterday and said, don't invade Ukraine. We will punish you economically if you do. Tucker went on a 14-minute rant last night defending Russia's actions, saying it's Biden who should be careful, because next thing you know, he might start a war if he threatens Putin. So there are so many things here to talk about. Let's first look at a couple of clips. Here is Tucker accurately saying, you know, the risk to Iowans from Putin and Russia is very low. And Tucker's absolutely right about that.
We're going to freeze Germany and Luxembourg, and that's going to teach Vladimir Putin. Again, what you just saw there is a child who has no idea what she's talking about, but keeps talking anyway. We will defend Ukraine, says Joni Ernst. Remember, this is a senator from Iowa. So what happens if we don't defend Ukraine, Joni Ernst? Will kids in Des Moines grow up to speak Russian? No one asked her that question. She's never thought about it for a moment. They're all just reading from the same talking points, from Adam Schiff to Roger Wicker to Joni Ernst.
Great. Okay. So, I mean, Tucker's right. He's condescending. He's pathetic. He's a propagandist, but he's right. The Russia thing is not a risk to kids in Iowa, where Joni Ernst is a senator. And I wish that that had been the perspective so many more times in American history when we were doing military engagements. Iraq comes to mind as one example. But we aren't talking about military intervention here, at least not right now, nor do I support one. What we're talking about here is economic sanctions and participating in the shared defense of Ukraine. So Tucker continues. We're going to kind of go back to what he said before the clip we just watched. Take a look.
But what's so interesting and ought to make you sit up and pay attention is suddenly partisan Republicans are making identical noises. Just this afternoon, Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, not a genius famously, but still a sitting Republican senator, went on Fox News to say we may need to send American troops to Ukraine. And possibly, because this isn't insane or anything, think about the use of nuclear weapons. Got that in our back pocket, nuclear weapons. Roger Wicker, sitting U.S. senator. No one in Washington laughed at Roger Wicker. This is so crazy that no one seems aware of how crazy it is. They're all just sitting back and listening to Tory and Nuland tell them what we need to do. How much has this penetrated the psyche of Washington, D.C.? Well, here's a sad piece of tape. This is Joni Ernst, who's totally affable, nice, Republican, sort of reasonable in most things from the Midwest. Suddenly sounding like a bloodthirsty warmonger, sounding a lot like actually Adam Schiff when she talks about that dastardly Vladimir Putin.
He needs to say to Vladimir Putin that we are no longer going to allow you to continue with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. We need you to know and understand that we will defend Ukraine. We will provide them assistance. He needs to make that very clear.
Putin is so bad, we're going to cut off natural gas to Western Europe in retaliation against him in December. We're going to freeze Germany and Luxembourg, and that's going to teach Vladimir Putin. Again, what you just saw there is a child who has no idea what she's talking about, but keeps talking anyway.
Okay, so then we get to like the part about Joni Ernst that I played for you earlier. So here's the deal with this. Your reaction might be Republicans just love Russia. So of course Tucker is siding with Russia. And it is true that increasingly under Trump, these Republicans are more and more sort of smitten by these authoritarian strongmen, and Russia is you know, one example of that. But this is actually bigger than that. And remember, I don't want war with Russia. I didn't want Trump going to war with Russia. I don't want Joe Biden going to war with Russia. I'm not calling for war with Russia at all, period. What I want to point out to you is that for Republicans, the principle is that Democrats are always in the wrong. Under Obama, the focus was beta Obama, let Putin take Crimea, and he just let him do it. He walked all over Obama once again. Why didn't Obama go to war? Why didn't Obama deploy troops? Why did Obama let Putin do whatever the hell he wanted? In comes Donald Trump. The focus then became, why wouldn't we want to get along with Putin? Getting along is good. You know, their voices would go up 3 octaves. Putin didn't do anything wrong. Let's be friends. Trump is right not to go after Putin. Trump is right not to treat Putin strongly and instead treats him with kid gloves. You warmongering liberals, stop saying Trump should be going aggressive with Putin. And then now it's Joe Biden. And now it's, well, even merely threatening economic sanctions is crazy. Putin's not that bad. Putin's just protecting his border. Well, but hold on a second, guys. Under Obama, you flipped out because Obama didn't stop Putin from taking Crimea. Now Biden is bad for doing something, at least an economic threat. I thought, wasn't this what you said Obama was wrong for not doing? And now Biden is wrong for doing it. And at the end of the day, these people are truly pathetic because there are no underlying values or principles with foreign policy. The only underlying principle is attack Democrats. The principle is it's always the fault of some Democrat doing something wrong. Either Democrats did the wrong thing by doing something, or Democrats did the wrong thing by not doing something, or Democrats wanted the Republican to do the wrong thing, but fortunately the Republican was smart and strong and wise enough not to do it. Under Obama, Obama was that Democrat. Under Trump, it was other Democrats saying, why is Trump treating Putin like this and not taking him seriously? And then under Biden, it goes back to being Joe Biden. This is amazing even for Tucker, the defense of Putin here. But at this point, I probably shouldn't even really be that surprised. We suspected, let me back up. When Trump got COVID, we knew we were being lied to about a lot of different things. Earlier in the week and last week, we came to learn that one of the things we were being lied about with regard to Trump's COVID was when he was sick. And it is now abundantly clear. Before it was 90% clear. Now it's completely clear. Trump had had a positive test before that infamous debate with Joe Biden, at which Trump showed up late and his staff said, we don't have, trust us. He was tested. We're not going to test on site. He was tested for COVID. We now know Trump had COVID during that debate. We also suspected that Trump was way sicker than was being admitted to by his doctors and his aides, his political aides at that time. And we now have more information about that. Thanks again to Mark Meadows, one of Trump's former chiefs of staff, who has now published a ton of information about what was going on behind the scenes. We have learned, number one, that Donald Trump's oxygen was not just a little low, but it was dangerously low back in October of 2020 when he tested positive for COVID-19. We also learned that the diagnosis in general was far more serious, that Trump's medical team actually pulled Mark Meadows aside and said, listen, his oxygen levels are really, really low. For his age, 86 or lower is very, very dangerous. There is also the revelation now that Donald Trump was so weak that he could not even carry his own briefcase, and that Mark Meadows was advised, you've got to convince Trump to get to Walter Reed Hospital now before things take a turn for the worse. Because if you're trying to hide how sick he is, if the guy can't even walk to the helicopter, it's going to be impossible to continue hiding it. Meadows went in to tell Trump, sir, you know, we got to move you. It's time to go to Walter Reed. Trump was supposedly sitting up in bed in a T-shirt and looked like he was not going to be able to go anywhere. And Meadows says, you know, we always saw the guy in either golf workouts or suit, golf outfits or suit and tie. And Trump looked very, very different here. He was a mess. His hair was a mess, on and on. And Mark Meadows said to Trump, it's better you walk out of here today under your own power than being brought out on a gurney or a stretcher. And that was the time at which it was determined by Trump, yeah, I'd better go. And the idea was, okay, let's go out and carry your briefcase. But he's too weak even to carry the briefcase, we have now learned. Now, are any of these details surprising? No, we had every reason to suspect that Trump was very, very sick and much sicker than was being admitted. Is Trump now admitting that this is what went on? No, no. Trump is denying these accounts and saying, I didn't have COVID during the debate. It's fake news, all this different stuff. Trump denies everything. So it seems pretty clear to me if you say, well, what's the most likely thing here? What's the most reasonable and likely explanation? Mark Meadows is probably telling the truth. I don't know of any reason, particularly when you know that if you tell these stories, being Mark Meadows, Trump's going to lose his mind. He's going to slam you. It's going to be completely crazy. And at the same time, it follows what we knew at the time. Dr. Sean Conley was being very, very squishy and evasive with, did Trump need oxygen? He's not on oxygen today. No, but did he in the past since coming here? He has not been on oxygen today. Okay, when did he first test positive? I'm not going to look backwards. We want to look forward to the president regaining his health. It all fits with everything that was going on. Trump always wanting to minimize anything bad and play up anything good. The very strange and narrow language used by his doctors, and on and on and on. So no shock, no surprise. Just imagine, I mean, I think the real takeaway here is, imagine how crazy things would have gotten had Trump refused to go to the hospital initially and ultimately needed to be brought on a stretcher. What would that have done? And if Trump had ended up even sicker and stayed in the hospital closer to the elections. I mean, it all, the way it went, ended up seeming not that bad for Trump at the end of the day. Still ultimately did not get him reelected, but it could have been much, much worse. And we're learning that through these revelations from Mark Meadows. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 219-2-DAVID-P. You can call anytime. I got a very interesting voicemail from the Eggman explaining a conversation he recently had with someone. Take a listen to this. This is interesting.
Hey, Dave, I just had a business transaction with a conservative Republican in Western New York. Some guy I met, I sold him something in my house, right? So anyway, we're making this deal, and I told him I'm a registered Republican, but I hate Trump and didn't vote for him. By the way, that's true. Did you know I am a registered Republican? Anyway, I told the guy this, and now that he thinks I'm a Republican, he gave me the inside dirt, like he's talking to his own team. And
right.
He said he is so fearful that Trump is going to run in 2024, and if Trump runs, they're going to lose, and they need to find somebody better than Trump because Biden is sick and Harris is horrible, and they're going to get nobody in the Dem side, but whoever they get is going to beat Trump, so they need to replace Trump. This guy was a terrified Republican conservative. He thinks the world is falling, is caving in, and he thinks radical left wings are taking over everything. So they're scared, Dave, and it was neat to hear this guy talk to me like I was on his own side. It was really, really eye-opening and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the thing to think about here is there's no exciting person on the Democratic side right now. I mean, you know, let's be honest. Joe Biden running for re-election isn't exciting, and I don't know if he will win. Joe Biden not running and it being Kamala Harris is not exciting, and I don't know that she will win. There's not really excitement. And you guys know that I just, in general, am not super impressed with politicians anyway. They're just people at the end of the day. But there's no one that's exciting me on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, you have the deep, devoted Trump cultists who still are completely on his side. But you also have what the Eggman is describing here. People who believe Trump's time has come and gone, and that Trump will run again due to narcissism and lose. And they don't know who to point to either. And I think this is why Ron DeSantis's name keeps coming up. He's competent in the sense of being able to keep it together. He is Trumpian in a lot of his ideology, and maybe more dangerously effective at being able to get a lot of that stuff done. But it is interesting that other than DeSantis, the people, the names you hear mentioned by the right, like more traditional Republicans, I don't think they have a chance. I think the Republican electorate has moved beyond sort of a traditional Republican at this point in time. And that's why you say, well, if it's got to be Trumpian, but less whacked and maybe younger, that's why the DeSantis possibility keeps coming up. So we're going to wait and see. On today's bonus show, we will talk about Joe Biden's federal contractor vaccine mandate being blocked by a judge. We will talk about the legalization of suicide pods in Switzerland. And we will also talk about the bill backed by progressives in Congress for a four-day work week. What is the chance that this passes? All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at...
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. One that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT, the inside from way out.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's an outrage that the House authorized $768 billion for the military at a time that we're dealing with a pandemic, the risk of climate change, racial and economic injustice, and to do it all in the name of an inflated version of the alleged threat from China just makes no sense.
As the House approves the largest military spending bill since World War II, even after the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, we'll speak with Bill Hartung of the Center for International Policy. Then we'll be talking about a new film, a short film, by Astra Taylor from The Debt Collective. It's called Your Debt is Someone Else's Asset.
The American dream used to be owning your own home. Now it's being debt-free. Altogether, Americans owe a record-breaking $15 trillion and counting. Sold as a lifeline, debt is too often an anchor, dragging people down with compounding interest and fees, pulling wealth and resources from the working class to bloat Wall Street's bottom line.
Then the invisible wall inside the secretive Libyan prisons that keep migrants out of Europe.
This effort to southernize the European border and to push the southern border of Europe further into Africa is an overall policy from the EU to try to stem the flow of people, desperate people, many of them, attempting to reach Europe.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As COVID-19 cases continue to surge across Europe, North America, and South Africa, a new report finds the world is dangerously unprepared for the next pandemic. Researchers at Johns Hopkins and the Global Health Security Index scored every country on its ability to prevent, detect, and respond to health emergencies. No country scored above 76 on a scale of 1 to 100. This is Sarah Gilbert, one of the creators of the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine.
The truth is, the next one could be worse. It could be more contagious or more lethal or both. We cannot allow a situation where we have gone through all we have gone through and then find that the enormous economic losses we have sustained mean that there is still no funding for pandemic preparedness.
On Wednesday, UNICEF warned the coronavirus pandemic has posed the greatest threat to children in 75 years, reversing progress on education, hunger, health care, poverty, abuse, and forced marriage. Here in the United States, the Senate's voted to reverse President Biden's vaccine mandate for larger businesses. Two Democrats, John Tester of Montana and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, sided with all 50 Republican senators to pass the measure. The bill faces an uphill path in the House. If approved, the measure would reverse Biden's order that all businesses with at least 100 workers require them to get vaccinated or undergo regular testing by January 4th. This comes as the number of U.S. residents fully vaccinated against COVID-19 topped 200 million. That's just over 60% of the population. Longtime German Chancellor Angela Merkel officially handed over the reins to Olaf Scholz Wednesday. Scholz of the center-left Social Democrats formed a three-way coalition with the Greens and the liberal Free Democrats after September's election. Scholz vowed continuity with the popular leadership of Merkel. Canada, Britain, and Australia have joined the diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics.